Hi. Okay.
Hi.
Long time no see, right?
I know.
Good morning.
Good morning. You look absolutely beautiful. I love the flower.
Thank you. Oh, you know, I got to do something. I'm falling apart. I'm getting older. 52. I'm not liking it.
you look wonderful.
Well, thank you so much for agreeing to do this morning's interview. I want to let people know this is the Migraine Diva, Jamie. She's on here on Instagram. She's like the queen. She knows everything there is to know about migraines. She was on the show before, and that's why I wanted to have her back on, because she just has a plethora of knowledge about this subject. And a lot of people are suffering, you know, with migraines. So I want to let people know, if you don't know, I'm Joy Keys. You can follow me on Twitter at Joy Keys. Also check me out on Facebook, Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys, and on Instagram, as we are here, Saturdays with Joy Keys. And I'm going to be doing some giveaways, so keep your eye posted for that during this interview. Now, people always say, like, a migraine, like, it's just a bad headache, right? I mean, Jamie, really, like, what are people complaining about? What's the difference between a headache and a migraine?
Okay, so the main difference is migraine is a neurobiological disease, and it runs on a spectrum. And migraine does not necessarily have to include headache or head pain. And there are so many other symptoms that accompany migraine. When you have a headache, you basically just have head pain. With migraine, you have sensitivity to light, to smells, to sounds. You have brain fog. You have difficulty concentrating. You have severe nausea and or vomiting. Or you can have other GI issues like diarrhea, or be very constipated with migraine. And there's a lot of cognitive issues, as well as having difficulty forming words and completing sentences, or just completely forgetting or just not being able to remember what you're trying to say. It's very debilitating. And
I want to let the audience know, I remember the first migraine I ever had. I'm not a sufferer of migraines, but I just remember I was probably in my 20s, and it was spring or summertime. And I got the dizziness, the noise, sensitivity. I didn't know what the hell was going on. I was about to go to the emergency room. I end up going and putting my head literally under the water in my tub. I did that, and then I could barely get up, and I went and I had to like turn the lights out. There were no lights on, but there was light coming from the windows in my living room. And so I went to my bedroom. I had to lay down, and I just lay down there. I don't remember how long I lay down, but it is debilitating. And I had no idea that's what was going on. And then I called my doctor, and I found out that I was probably having a migraine. And so it's not a joke. It's not funny feeling at all. Now, there are different types of migraines, though. Can you talk about that? And somebody's migraine, like you said, may not be the same because of their symptoms. But, you know, people say, oh, it's back here. It's up here. Like, can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. So typically when we're speaking of migraine, we're talking about migraine that, you know, either comes with an aura or without an aura. So an aura can be changes in your vision. It could be motor issues. And that usually precedes the head pain by maybe about 5 to 15 minutes or 20 minutes. I'm not an expert, so don't quote me on that. I have migraine without aura. So I don't get any other visual changes or anything like that prior to the head pain. But there's that. And there's also vestibular migraine, which that includes a lot of unsteadiness and dizziness and lightheadedness, so much so where with vestibular migraine, you're not able to drive yourself. Walking is difficult. Some people may require PT to help with their motor skills, because the dizziness. It's like vertigo. It's like really intense. It's really bad. There's hemiplegic migraine. Hemiplegic migraine mimics a stroke, and that's very scary. So you can, you know, lose motor function on one side of your body. And that's very scary for someone, you know, experiencing that for the first time, because like, oh my gosh, I can't move my left side. I'm having trouble speaking and my words are slurring. And it's very similar to a stroke.
Yeah, that sounds like a stroke. Yeah.
Right.
Now, what about you though? Now, when did you first have your migraine? What was that like?
Okay, so because of how long I've had migraine and my work in the community and just my knowledge of the disease, I understand now I had migraine from the age of 2. And
what?
So, yes.
2 years old?
2 years old. So for me, then I had abdominal migraine, which is very common in children, adolescents. So I basically had severe stomach pain, violent nausea and vomiting. I had the sensitivities to light, smell, odor. Motion was a huge trigger for me. So riding in the car or playing or being on the swing, like, would bring it on. Didn't have any head pain.
What did your parents think? What did your parents think was going on?
So they thought I was just really sensitive to motion, had really bad motion sickness, because that tended to be one of the biggest triggers, that and heat. I have heat intolerance as well. So keeping me cool and hydrated was really important. And that continued on through starting grade school. And I was in the third grade, 8 years old, and I experienced my first migraine with head pain when I was 8. And I don't remember my first attack, but I can tell you from that point on, I just remember being a little girl sitting in my room, trying not to cry because crying made it hurt, trying not to breathe because breathing hurt. And just not understanding why something was so painful and there was nothing I could do to stop it. It was
so
really...
there was no medicine or anything at that time
they could
give
time,
you for your age?
No.
Wow.
No, this was like 1980. This was 1986. So the way migraine was treated then, it was seen as a blood vessel disorder. So because my mother had migraine when she was younger, she knew I wasn't having a regular headache. So yeah. I was seen by my pediatrician, and my father, just, you know, never being satisfied with anything, made sure I got a referral to a neurologist, which is very rare. Especially in 1986, Black girl in the Bronx, New York, Queens, New York, like, who, that doesn't happen. So I got an official, right, I got an official diagnosis at 8, and I was put on a preventive medication, which was a blood pressure medication. I was on that for 5 years from 8 until 13, but it didn't help me at all. But when it came to the actual treatment of the acute pain, there wasn't anything on the market yet. Imitraxin, that wasn't even developed yet. I think that came out in 1990. But I had to rely on Tylenol. You know, there wasn't anything for children with migraines.
Did anybody else in your family have migraines? Did you know anybody, friends or anything, that had these symptoms that you could even talk to about this?
Absolutely. Of course, when I had my mother, her father, my grandfather, had migraine really bad as well. And one of my first cousins had migraine also. So it runs in my mother's side of the family. It was something that, you know, we knew about. So there wasn't, you know, a lack of knowledge when it came to that. There was, you know, no lack of support. I was extremely supported and always
now,
taken well care of.
Is it hereditary, or could somebody have migraines and nobody else in their family have migraines, you know?
Well, they're trying to find out if there are any genes linked to the susceptibility of having migraine. There is one set of genes that do exist, and that's for familial hemiplegic migraine. Those have been identified, but there really isn't a specific genetic component that has been identified. But what we do know is it's more of like your brain is more susceptible to being hyperactive and hypersensitive. And so there probably is some type of genetic component to that if you're predisposed to that because of a certain set of genes, which haven't really been identified yet. But then also if you're in around certain situations or certain environments or certain triggers happen over a course of, say, a couple of days or a couple of hours, then your brain is more likely to respond to that in the form of head pain, nausea, dizziness, lightheadedness. So there's still a lot of research going on to really identify, you know, what that pathophysiology is for migraine. But there we tend to see a pattern of, if there's someone with migraine and it did run in their family, you're more likely to also have migraine. So that is something, yeah.
I want to give something away. Okay. What am I going to give away? I'm going to give away a signed copy of Viola Davis's recent book. A signed copy of her book. Now, how can you win this book, you ask? Well, what was the last episode of How to Get Away with Murder? What was the title of that episode? You need to email me at SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@hotmail.com. Again, SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@hotmail.com. And you could be the winner. You have to be the first person to answer, and you could be the winner of this signed copy book. All right? That's all I wanted to say.
That's an awesome giveaway, right, though.
So you were talking about triggers. Let's say hi to these people out here. Good morning, everybody, waving. If you have a question, I think you can, like, say you have a question, and then I'll see it pop up here. But thank you so much for joining us. I hope this is helping everybody. Where can they find you online, Jamie? So in case people want to touch base with you afterwards.
Sure. So I'm on Instagram and Twitter. My handles are Migraine Diva. You could find my Facebook page, The Migraine Diva. I also have a blog, themigrainediva.com, which I'm not as active on as I used to be because I'm doing so much work outside of that with other advocacy organizations to try to advance, you know, people's understanding, education, knowledge, and resources around migraine and just headache diseases in general. But yeah, definitely Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and my blog.
Now, now that you're an adult, do you mind me asking what type of medicine you're taking now? Is it helping?
Okay, so migraine has progressively gotten worse for me as I've gotten older. And that changed for me during my last pregnancy, where I experienced my first intractable or daily migraine for the first trimester I was pregnant. And that was really stressful and hard to deal with.
Every day? Is that what that means? Intractable? I just want to make that clear.
Yes. So intractable is daily pain. And I'm also refractory. So that means that my migraine is not responsive to treatment or doesn't respond well to treatment. So that informs the way I care and manage for my migraine today. So basically, a lot of these medications that have been prescribed for migraine, a lot of them are off-label medications. So because there really hasn't been anything developed specifically for migraine until like maybe about 4 or 5 years ago. But most people are prescribed antidepressants, blood pressure medications, anti-seizure medications. I've tried all of those things.
That Neurontin, those are kind of different things I had read about. Right. What about alternative medicines? Massage or Reiki or hypnotism?
Yes. Yeah, so I use a lot of combination therapy. So I use pharmaceuticals, and I also use alternative or complementary medicine. So massage therapy is really, really big for me. Acupuncture helps if I do it the same day I do massage therapy. So stacking treatments is helpful for me. I also, meditation, mindfulness, deep breathing are a huge component as well for me. Learning how to manage my mental health using those tools really helps me manage my chronic pain as well. So there are just a lot of different methods I use. And also getting Botox every 3 months and getting nerve blocks in between those sessions helps to manage my daily pain level so that I can function and be comfortable. Because right now I'm at the point right now where I'm just trying to be comfortable and function daily because my pain isn't going away.
Now, do your children have migraines? Because this is going back to the hereditary matter? Were you worried about them having it when they were born or anything like that?
You know what? Honestly, I wasn't, because, again, I didn't know migraine when I was younger could be this bad. And my mother kind of, I want to say, outgrew her migraine, but she really wasn't experiencing them when she became a mom, you know, with me and my sisters. So I never had the expectation of migraine still being in my life as an adult. And then also growing up, all of my doctors told me I would outgrow them by the time I turned 18. So I thought there was an expiration date to migraine.
Now, what about allergies and as a trigger? Has that ever come up? Have you ever heard anything about that? You know, seasonal allergies being triggers for migraines, dust in the home being triggers. Have you heard anything of that nature?
There are a lot of environmental triggers. So if you have seasonal allergies, I mean, if it's inflaming any of the nerves around your face, that can definitely exacerbate or contribute to, a migraine attack occurring later. But then also there are a lot of people who have been misdiagnosed with sinus headache, but they truly have migraine. Some of the symptoms are pretty similar. But yes, there are a lot of environmental triggers that can exacerbate your pain.
Dairy, nuts, chocolate, I mean, things that you talk about, I've read about in terms of headaches, are they connected to migraines? How do they impact people, or is it just different for everyone?
It's different for everybody. Migraine is not the same for every person. Not everybody has food triggers. Some people can eat whatever they want and it doesn't affect their migraine. Some people have very sensitive food triggers. And you kind of just find out if they are a trigger for you or not just by living with migraine, you know, and realizing, okay, this is what happened today. This is what I ate today. And it's important to also understand that it's not just one thing that will set off your migraine attack.
Hey, Una, I see you there on there. I want to ask, what organizations are you working with, and which ones have helped you in terms of like, support groups? What about financially? You know, all these things you're talking about, like stacking treatments and things, they cost money. Where can people go to get help for this?
There are many great organizations that offer many types of resources. If you're looking specifically for support groups or events where you can be around other people with migraine, milesformigraine.org is a great organization. They put on events in different cities every year. It's their walk, run, relax event. And its intention is to bring people with migraine together in a public event and participate at whatever level you can. There's no pressure to run or walk the race. They have relaxation activities. And since the pandemic, a lot of this has gone virtual. So you can participate in your own hometown. You can organize, you know, something with your friends, your family, your neighborhood on those days. They also have support groups as well, in person or virtual. And they have great free resources like gentle yoga. I think it's like every Tuesday, every week they provide that for free for people. It's on Zoom, I believe. Great resource there. If you're looking for a central place to go to find out what all the organizations are doing, the Coalition for Headache and Migraine Patients, headachemigraine.org, is a great place. So this is a coalition of patient opinion leaders and migraine advocacy and headache advocacy organizations. And we all come together. I'm a member of this coalition as well. And we all come together and share our resources. And there's great information there. It's specific to insurance barriers or the inability to get certain treatments covered. They have great resources there. And if you're looking for assistance, one more I wanted to share.
Mm-hmm. I said that's a really big issue, this insurance thing. You know, and you mentioned earlier about the off-label use of medicines. And for people who may not understand, it's like the medicine was brought out or developed for one thing, and now they're using it for migraines or trying to use it. And a lot of times people have difficulty getting that covered. And that's just not with migraines. That's with a lot of other illnesses that people are dealing with that you have to go through all these hoops. And they're like, did you try A? Did you try B? Did you try C? And then, okay, you tried A, B, and C. Okay, then maybe we'll pay for it. It's not a guarantee. So that is a real issue. What if, you said there's one something else you wanted to...
Right. One other great resource is the Migraine Care Line, and that is a service put out from the Patient Advocacy Foundation, and it's a free resource, and it helps people who are unable to get their insurance to cover a specific treatment, or if you need help with filing for Social Security disability because you're no longer able to work because of your migraine. So I really encourage people to seek that out if you need help. They assign you a case manager and they kind of work on your behalf to help make sure that you're able to get access to therapies that your insurance is denying, especially like you were saying, that's called step therapy that you were talking about, where your doctor may prescribe you the more expensive medication, but the insurer wants you to try and fail on two or three other medications first before allowing that other prescription, the necessary therapy, to be prescribed. And that harms patients because during that process, and that can take months or years, you're getting sicker, you're dealing with side effects from medications that aren't helping you. And it's very harmful to the patient, and it causes a rift between the patient and provider relationship, because those decisions should be between the patient and their provider, not the health insurance company.
But also emotionally, you know, socially, this impacts people's lives. I mean, if you're in pain every day, you don't want to go outside, I'm sure. You don't want to talk to people. If the sound issue, the light issue, you may not want to work, and people will try to be like, oh, you're being lazy, and that's not the case, because they can't see, unless they have the stroke type of migraine, what's happening to you. Everything is inside of you, you know what I mean? And so there's no, people might think there's no proof or something, like, you know, how do you prove that the person's having a migraine or not? I'm sure, what did the doctors say? How do they prove to the insurance? How do they prove that? That's a good thing. That's a good question.
So with migraine, there are no diagnostic tests that show that you have migraine. There's no blood test. There's no scan that'll say this person has migraine. Migraine is diagnosed based off of the patient's, them telling the doctor, these are my symptoms. It's based off of that. It's based off of the patient's symptomology. Patient reporting is what a migraine diagnosis is based off of. And that, you know, can then in turn, you know, make the stigma around migraine a lot worse. Like you said, it's an invisible illness. You don't look like you're sick. You don't look like you're disabled unless you are like physically away in a dark space, you know, curled up in a ball, actively throwing up. Outside of that, you could be experiencing so many symptoms, but you look okay on the outside. And that, you know, adds to, you know, that external stigma, people, you know, not believing you that you're in pain. And you also internalize that a lot of the time, like, well, I don't look like I'm sick, and I don't want to complain that I'm feeling this way. And I don't want people to think I don't want to show up or I'm not reliable. Right. So it does affect someone's mental state a lot. So it's more than just the physical pain, it's the emotional and mental aspect of it as well.
Do you mind me asking about people going to therapy, mental health therapy? Has that helped people? Do you think that helps or not?
It can. It depends, because if you're going to therapy for, you know, mental health disorders, depression, anxiety, PTSD, OCD, most of the time, those are the things that are being managed and given coping skills for. Not every therapist that you go see is, you know, someone that works specifically with chronic pain patients. So you might not get that, you know, intersection of how do I manage with my chronic pain as well as my depression, my anxiety, because people who have migraine are more likely to also have depression or anxiety. And the more you're in pain, the more you're going to have feelings of depression and anxiety. And so learning how to cope with both of them effectively is not something that always occurs. There aren't a lot of resources available for people to have access to therapists that specialize or work solely with chronic pain patients. There are pain psychologists, but those are few and far between. And there already is a lack of access for behavioral health services anyway in this country for a lot of people.
For people, there is a pain association. I think I'm going to try to post it. If I find it, I'll email it to you. And they might have resources for therapists who their specificity is chronic pain. Because like you said, but, you know, as a therapist, they have to admit that they are not competent and then transfer you or refer you over to someone else who is. So, and you as a patient have a right to choose somebody else if you don't like that therapist. And same with your doctors. If you're not satisfied with the advice you may be getting or the medication or whatever, you have a right to, and hopefully you'll be able with your insurance, to try to go find someone else. But also, Jane, I want you to mention, what is this? I have another giveaway. Ah, another giveaway. Oh my God, what is this? Janelle Monae's book, a signed copy. Let's see that little sticker. It says signed copy. This is a signed copy of her book. This is the Memory Librarian. So how can you win this? Okay, so how can you win this? What is the oldest library in the United States? Let's go like that. Email SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@hotmail.com. Again, what is the oldest library in the United States? You can email SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@hotmail.com, and you could be a winner of this book. So we're going to get ready to wrap this up. I want you to mention those organizations again, Jamie, that people could go to.
Absolutely. So there's milesformigraine.org. Highly recommend them for patient support and wonderful free tools and resources. There is the Coalition for Headache and Migraine Patients. That's headachemigraine.org. And I don't remember off the top of my head the website for the Migraine Caroline, but do Google the Patient Advocacy Foundation. And on their website, you can find links to the Migraine Caroline if you need help with getting access or coverage for your therapies, for your treatments, or if you just need help in starting the disability process.
Wow. And how can they find you again?
You can find me on Instagram or Twitter at Migraine Diva. I'm on the on Facebook. The Migraine Diva is my Facebook page, and my blog is themigrainediva.com.
Excellent, excellent. Thank you so much for, you know, agreeing to do this morning. I want to let people know, again, all those two books, if you want to win them, you have to be the first to email the answers to SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@hotmail.com. I also want to let you know you can follow me on Twitter at Joy Keys. Also check me out on Facebook, Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys, and here at or on Instagram, Saturdays with Joy Keys. I'm going to be posting the audio of this interview. It'll be on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, iHeart Radio, Amazon Music, Spotify, Stitcher tomorrow. So look for that tomorrow after 12. It'll be up posted, the audio. So in case you missed the beginning, you'll still be able to listen to the whole interview that we did here today because it's Migraine Awareness Month, June. I forgot to say that at the beginning. But thank you again, Jamie, for agreeing to do this. And I wish you so much luck with your treatments and just helping other people that you are going through what you're going through and you're still taking time to help people. That's a lot. That's a lot.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, everybody. I see you guys there waiting. We couldn't really, pay attention as we were trying to focus. But thank you. So you guys have a great weekend, okay?
Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.